The Farm in the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, weather or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McCray. Transitioning the family farm and business operations from one generation to another can have its challenges. Ron Rabo has personally experienced what can go wrong and right. Not only does he speak on the subject, but his new book, Make Your Own Way, shares his real-life story and the keys to making the best of those transitions. It's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside, brought to you by Pivot BioProven. It's time to rethink nitrogen. Pivot BioProven replaces nitrogen fertilizer with microbes that adhere to the crop's root system and apply nitrogen each day. 2019 performance report data shows Pivot BioProven consistently outperforms synthetic nitrogen fertilizer year over year, providing corn growers improved yields and a more dependable nitrogen supply that isn't lost to the environment. To read the performance report, go to pivotbio.com. And for more information on Pivot BioProven, text PROVEN to 31313. If you are a part of a family-owned farm or business, you have perhaps experienced the challenge of passing those assets from one generation to the other. Those situations can quickly become complicated when extended family members with varying interests are involved in those changes. And even if you've already done some planning for such changes, there may be situations that have not been accounted for that could pose major hurdles to those who will be in charge moving forward. Ron Rabo knows about the topic firsthand. As you are about to hear, his transition took place suddenly and under less than harmonious feelings between members of the family. His latest book speaks of that experience and offers advice that all of us can use when we go through those times of change. Ron Rabo joins me. He farms in southeastern Wyoming. You may have heard Ron here before. We've talked farming and lots of different topics. Ron, it's good to have you back. And why don't you begin by just talking about the growing season out there? I know you've got a lot going on, and you probably even got some haze and smoke from the wildfires out that direction, I think.
Yeah, well, it's always a pleasure to talk with you, Andrew. And yes, we are overcome with smoke. The last couple of days have been a little rough. We did receive some of our first moisture in actually multiple weeks. And that, of course, came in the form of snow on the 8th of September. We had 3 days of below freezing. And so that was a little bit early, even for us who are out here on the high plains. But it's been a challenging growing season here. I understand that it's been fairly decent out in the Midwest where you're at. But we've had very, very little rain here and extremely hot temperatures. I would say unseasonably warm for as long as it was that way. And so we had about one measurable rain from the end of May to the 8th of September when we got the snow. So it has really been it's been a hard summer for us.
For those that don't remember, talk about your farming operation for just a moment, and then how is the weather going to impact it this year as far as your yields and your crop?
Yeah, so we're located in southeastern Wyoming. We have an organic farm here. We farm a little over 8,000 acres. We raise a variety of crops. We have winter wheat, of course, is our primary crop, but we also raise, this year we have yellow peas, chickpeas, proso millet, flax, safflower, spelt. And so it's kind of been a wide array of things. We've had, you know, I would say the winter wheat crop was good to average, maybe even a little bit better than average. But everything else was down a little bit just because of the dry conditions. We had a couple of crops that we experimented with this year, hemp being one of those for grain. And it was pretty remarkable to me. We haven't gone to take it to harvest yet, but I've got plants that are over 7 feet tall, and it's pretty amazing what it did. It's amazing what the safflower and the flax did. And so, you know, from that perspective, that growing perspective, I would say it was good. You know, if you're going to experiment with crops, the year to do it is when it's super dry and you have really adverse conditions, so you can see if these crops will actually survive and produce. And so I can say pretty confidently that we'll be raising all three of those again, just based on how they performed in this particular year. So we're trying to get winter wheat in right now. We always plant in the end of August and the month of September. And it was so dry until we got this snow on the 8th of September. There's a lot of guys around us, including ourselves, that waited to plant wheat just because there was just so much sand on the top that you just couldn't get it in shallow enough to get it to come up.
How much snow did you get?
Well, we only got just a couple of inches, but a little bit further north of us, they got up to a foot. And so it really was widely variable. We got those couple of inches of snow over a couple of days, and then we had really cold temperatures, which, you know, obviously wasn't helpful to some of the fall crops. But then we got a half inch of rain after the snow was over, and I think that's really what bailed us out.
You see snow out there, but that's got to be pretty darn early for you to have snow on September 8th.
Well, we're used to adverse conditions here at 5,300 feet on the plains, but even the 8th of September for us is early, and that's early for a frost, too. Typically, our freezes don't happen until towards the end of September and sometimes even into October. And so having one this soon was a pretty big surprise for us. But it was also widely spread. It wasn't just concentrated in this small area where I'm at. I mean, it was over Nebraska, Colorado, a good portion of Wyoming. And so, you know, it's at least, you know, if you've got to have misery for a while, at least we were in good company.
Right. Right. Well, we're going to spend some time talking about your latest book here, Make Your Own Way. And it's a topic that we have touched on before, because you certainly talked about this, you speak about it, but now you have the book out. And it's certainly a topic that I think a lot of us in farming deal with. And it's really passing that farming operation on from one generation to the other. So some people may remember this, but give us the quick thumbnail sketch of what took place in your family to give them some background, because things changed drastically for you and that farm in late 1999, if I remember right.
That's correct. Yep. Great memory. Yeah. You know, I'm fifth generation on our family cattle operation. And like many of those of us who are in production agriculture, these operations have been passed down from generation to generation. And ours was certainly no different. Although you see, you know, the main patriarch or matriarch that starts the operation, you know, in our case, it was over 100 years ago. And that was really their dream. That's what they wanted to do. And it just so happens that the next generation took interest in it and carried it on and so forth, all the way down to my generation. Well, by the time that it got to my generation, I was actually dealing with second and third cousins. And so my dad was actually dealing with his father and his two first cousins. And he was really the hub of the entire operation. So we've seen it time and time again, right, where you have that main leader who really is the one that is the glue for the entire operation. And they're the ones that hold it together. They're the ones that kind of instruct everyone to go about their day in a certain way and to accomplish certain things. They're really the ones that do the business planning and have a pretty good handle on the marketing and the vision for the future of the corporation. And so that was my father. And in late 1999, I was home working cattle with him, and he collapsed. And the short story is I gave him CPR and he didn't make it. And I was 26 years old at the time, and it really had a drastic input effect on what happened in our family operation. And so from that moment forward, everything in my life changed. Everything in our ranch changed. Everything in our family changed. And so what happened and what I witnessed firsthand was that with his death, it brought about such abrupt change to the personality of the people that were involved in the operation that it almost became a hostile environment. where everyone was trying to latch on to what they had because everyone was vying for that top spot. Everyone said, I want to be the leader. I want to be the one that's in charge. I'm the oldest, so therefore I am entitled to be in charge. We had other family members that came back to the ranch that they wanted to become involved. And so to me, it felt like, and I'm sure that many of the folks that are in the listening audience would agree, if the same thing has happened to them, or they can see this coming, that when the matriarch or the patriarch of the family dies, when the hub of the operation dies, people change, and people come out of the woodwork, so to speak. And it's really to me, it was a grab for power, and it was a grab for money, and it was a grab for control. And that really sent our operation into a downward spiral. But as I explain in my book, that downward spiral really began about 30 years before the death of my father. But in family operations, particularly in agriculture, because we're all emotionally attached to what we do, the land that we have, you know, especially if an operation's been in our family for an extended period of time, that we become so attached to it that we lose our sense of reality, that we lose our sense of business acumen, that it becomes more about saving the operation and more about just keeping the operation in business and functioning rather than doing what's right for the people that are actually part of it.
You get into this some in the book. I mean, certainly the situation after your father passed away was not good among the family members. I don't know how to describe it beyond that and how much detail, but you had a lot of challenges.
Yeah, you know, there were a lot of challenges. I don't think that my challenges are necessarily an anomaly. You know, in production agriculture, especially because that's what I know. But I think really in a larger sense in small business, in family business, I think that, you know, a lot of family businesses go through this exact same type thing. And I had relatives that were, that were very crude, that were very rude, that were, certainly not in it to benefit the business, certainly were not in it and maintain relationships and family. But like I said, it was really about control and ego and power and money. And so I found myself in this position where I never wanted to be. But I, you know, in retrospect, I really had looked at the position that my father was in, and I was in that same position. He just had chosen not to do anything about it at the time. But I think that that was the generation where it was more important to keep the operation in business and to keep everyone, I would, in my opinion, fictitiously, you know, in good relationships with each other, in the sense of partners and the other families that were living there. You know, we had one compound other than my grandparents' place, and we had four houses there. So not only did everyone get to work together, they also got to live right next door to each other, too. So that provided challenges, you know, unto itself, too. So I think that there was just a lot of pretending over the years of, hey, we love each other and we get along and the ranch is the number one. And the only thing that was correct about that is that the ranch was number one. And that became extremely obvious to me after my dad passed away, and the way that I was treated, the way that my mother was treated, the way that my grandparents were treated, it became extremely evident that the entity itself was much more important than any one individual that was involved in that operation.
I want to get into in a moment what you did going forward with your operation. But if you could go back what should your family have been doing before your dad passed? Could you have avoided some of the pitfalls that you ran into after his death?
Absolutely. And I explain that in the, you know, the end chapters of my book. You know, really the biggest thing is open and honest communication. And, you know, we have this false sense as human beings that we're already good communicators. And when I work with audiences and groups of people and individuals across the nation, one thing I know for sure is that we are very poor communicators. But that's not how we perceive ourselves to be. So to their credit, my father and his partners had gone and seen an estate attorney, and they had an estate plan and a buy-sell agreement for decades, really. And that buy-sell agreement, as I explained in my book, wasn't necessarily fair to every single one of the family members because it automatically excluded, with a males-only provision in the operating agreement and in the buy-sell agreement, it automatically excluded other family members who otherwise may have been as qualified or even more qualified. So to their credit, they did do estate planning. And so they set things up in the buy-sell agreement in accordance to what their desires were and in accordance to you know, what they had all agreed to at the time. The one provision that they did not foresee is that because of the males only provision, the sons only provision, as I explain in the book, that when my father passed away, he passed away out of order, which messed things up for the transfer of my grandfather's share of the operation. And so that's really what threw a cloud over this whole thing immediately, is because now, because I wasn't my grandfather's son, and because his son had passed away and he had no son that he could pass it through to me, that the other side of the family was now going to get the majority of the operation, even though split down the family tree, it had always been equal at 50% one side, 50% the other side. So when I look at what happened after my father died, had they sat down and had conversations with each other and really, and I understand, I mean, I get it, that these conversations can be extremely difficult to have. But just because you don't have those conversations doesn't mean that things are going to work out the way you want them to work out. It most especially means that they won't work out the way you hope that they'll work out. And so even though those conversations are difficult to have, they must be had. So had my father and his partners sat down and said, hey, what happens if one of us dies first? What happens if we have a daughter that wants to become a partner in the operation and we have this sons only provision? I mean, what are we going to do about this? My father had one partner and his only child was a daughter. And so she was automatically excluded from ever becoming a part of the operation just because of the provision that had been set forth years earlier. And so this stuff had been established for decades before his death. But honest conversation never took place. So the things that I heard in private before my dad passed away, but from my dad's partners after he passed away, were that everyone had wished that they could just have a portion of the operation so they'd have enough money to retire, so that they could really do what they wanted to do with it. But those conversations never took place. And so it really created so much mud in the conversation that I think that there was a lot of, I don't think, I know that there was a lot of discontent for those decades, but no one ever spoke up and actually said anything. But because there was not this appropriate structure in the estate planning, and because no one ever talked about what their own individual needs, wants, and desires were, And because the ranch's mission was the most important, not the people, then everything became convoluted upon the death of my father. And so it's extremely important that not only you have an estate plan done, because that's important, not only do you have a farm consultant come in and help you develop an appropriate corporate structure, but it's important that we talk about the emotional side of this thing, because family, farm, and ranch transition is the white elephant in the room that no one wants to talk about. And the reason that they don't want to talk about it is because, for one, they don't want to talk about their own demise. And for two, they don't want to talk about change. They don't want to have the thought that one day their operation may not exist in the way in which it currently does. But the reality is that everything changes, and you have to make it a choice. And that choice is either you're going to be in charge of how that change goes to the best of your ability by openly and honestly communicating and structuring things appropriately, or you can do half of the job and then not have the emotional side of the conversation, and things will change anyway. But for some reason, we think that if we just don't have that conversation, everything will work out. And we do that with a false pretense.
So these situations a lot of times can be pretty complicated, but in your book and when you're speaking to folks, then that, you know, let's hope that they're taking care of some of these things, conversations, before something happens. What do you suggest they do? What steps do you suggest to help them head off these situations and hopefully make the transition as best as possible?
Yeah, you know, in a partnership situation, what I recommend is that the individual families by themselves sit down. So that means it might just be husband and wife. It might be husband and wife and children. But they need to sit together as a family unit. And they need to say, if all things aside, what kind of life do we want to live? Where do we want to end up? And what do we want our future to be? If we had the ability to choose whatever life we wanted to choose, what would it be and what would it look like? And so everyone's going to have different opinions on that. Okay. But they need to get on the same page as a family. And then the family as a unit needs to sit down with the other families in the partnership unit and discuss their own individual goals. They may be so far off of base that they recognize at that moment that their goals, their ambitions, their vision does not match up. And if it doesn't match up, the time to change it is then, when everyone is getting along, when the business is currently, operating efficiently with the current partners. And so they may find out that they're on the same page, but if they don't have that conversation, then they don't know. So first and foremost, have the conversation in family. And this isn't a matter of, hey, let's sit down tonight and figure it out. You know, this is a process, and anything that's this big and anything that has value and anything that's worth saving and anything that is worth, keeping in your family is worth time. And it's worth time in emotional energy, in conversation. And so, one, visit with family. Two, visit as a family with the partners and decide where the operation needs to go. That might mean bringing in now an estate planner. It might mean bringing in a farm consultant who can properly set up a corporate structure that exists like any other corporation in America, where there's a board, where there are officers, where there are positions, there are interviews, instead of just saying, well, you know, John Jr. wants to come back to the farm, so that's the way it's going to be. And that's kind of the way our operation was. And so there was no actual corporate structure. Everyone was equal partners. So therefore, everyone had this false pretense as well, that that they owned everything because they were a partner. Well, in a partnership where everyone's equal partners, just as in our ranching operation, everyone owns everything, so no one really owns anything because nothing is set aside separately and nothing is identified, you know, specifically. And so it's extremely important to get those things out on the table. And the time to do it is when, like I said, when everyone is getting along, when the business is functioning appropriately, not after someone dies, because then if everything isn't structured the way that it needs to be, you're going to have problems. And I would say that that's probably 95% or even better of the operations in American agriculture are at that point where the matriarch, the patriarch dies, everything changes. And I don't mean just in the business, but I mean with family. And so you have to decide, is what's more important? Is my relationship with my family more important? Is my relationship with my partners more important? Or is just the survivability of the entity the most important?
So you get into some of this, and I think you're fine with sharing what ended up happening with your family, the relationships that were strained. Did they ever recover much? How did things turn out for you?
You know, that's a great question. I reveal this in the book, and I really tried to spend time in the book being real and being open and being honest and saying, these are my emotions. They are real. This is what happened. This is real. These are the documents that back up the split of the ranch, you know, that contradict what my ex-partners put forth in the community and what people perceive things to be in the community. So some of those relationships, I have one partner that's passed, actually two partners that have passed away since, and the only living partner has refused to speak to me. And that has been, gosh, we're over 17 years now. And so he has refused to speak to me and his family, which is, you know, that's his choice. But I do have other relationships with family members that have begun to be restored. And it's interesting, as I point out in my book, that if you just stay the course, when you know that what you're doing is the right thing for the right reasons, and you don't intentionally set out to harm anyone, and if you just stay the course by doing the right thing and by doing good things, people will eventually see through that. Now, will everyone see through that? Absolutely not. But the vast majority of people will see through that. And so the community, you know, I think has gotten their hands around this, or gotten their heads wrapped around, I should say, this whole thing of, you know, me splitting the ranch up. Some family members have not. My father's own sister, which is his only sister, never will. She will never come to the realization to realize the value of maintaining a relationship with me or my family. Now, I have reconnected with her son, who's my only cousin on that side of the family, and he understands. In fact, there's a good portion of the book is in a letter written to him when he had responded to me in trying to reach out with him about, you know, all the horrible things that I had done to his mother. And so I thought, you know, now it's time. It's 15 years later. Now is the time to say, you know, I'm gonna deal with absorbing as much falsity as what was out there in the community. You know, gossip, I guess, is the word I'm looking for. Is that I had kind of had enough. And I said, you know what? We need to talk about this. We need to bring it to the forefront. And you can either believe what happened or you can continue to believe what you're told. And so I thought, you know, I've got nothing to lose by laying everything out there. And that really led me to writing the book in its entirety, which was, you know, hey, this is real stuff. I mean, there's more, you know, there's more severe things that have happened in other families. But if we don't have that conversation and we don't realize that someone else has been through it too, then maybe we don't have the fortitude to do what we know needs to be done. But my hope was that people could read my book, they could read my story, and they could say, wow, if he's done it, then we can do it too. And by the way, if we don't do it, maybe this is what will happen to us as well. And so, you know, my wife and I have really been on an island all to ourselves for the vast majority of the time that we have been farming on our own. And so, I mean, really the fact of the matter is that when I left the ranch, I really didn't know what I was going to do, but what I did know was that I was not going to subject my marriage or my children, which I didn't have at the time, to the environment in which I found myself living in. And so that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about families sitting down and saying, what's important to us? My wife and I had to sit down by ourselves and say, what's the most important? We have one shot. We have one chance. This is the freest country in the world. What do we choose to do and how do we choose to live? And if the answer for you is not concurrent with the current situation you find yourself living in, then change is necessary. And that's what we found ourselves. I mean, sometimes I would go back to the ranch and I would say, things seem pretty good. You know, everyone seems to get along and I really kind of like this. And I think that everything's going to be okay. And then the next day I would come back and all hell had broken loose. And I thought, man, I can't wait to get out of here. This is awful. We need to change. We need to do something. So I had had enough of that waffling back and forth that I finally had to look at the operation. I finally had to say, okay, even if I do love it, if something were to happen to me today, where does that leave my wife? If something were to happen to me in 5 years and nothing changes, where does that leave the children that I want to have? That puts them in the exact same position that I found myself being in. And that was something that I could not live with. Because as a man, as a husband, as a father, as a leader in the community, it's my job to do the right thing for the right reasons and to make sure that I'm placing my marriage and my family in a healthy environment. And the environment in which I found myself in was absolutely not healthy.
You certainly in the book lay things out, and you know what you're writing from is experience, and you really share all the details. It's really interesting. I've gotten through most of it, but not all of it. But for people that are interested, how's the best way for them to connect with you or to find the book?
Sure. So the best way is to visit our website, which is rabofarms.com. So that's R-A-B as in boy, O-U, farms.com. So they can also visit ronrabo.com. And so the book is up on both of those sites. They can go to Amazon and they can just type in my name and they can find it there as well. The book is called Make Your Own Way, One Family Story of Breaking the Mold and Achieving Independence in American Agriculture. And for those people that are interested really not just in production agriculture, but in family business in general, I mean, obviously I write from a production agriculturalist perspective because that's the one that I know and that's where my story resonates from. But it, just in family business, all of this stuff is universal. I mean, all of it applies. And it really comes down to priorities, making good choices, recognizing, you know, that you really do have one life to lead. How do you want to lead that life? And so many of us, as I think my father did, find themselves in a situation that change is hard to accept. And so they just don't change. And because they don't change, not only was the structure of our operation in trouble, but the operation itself was in trouble because there had not been enough business planning to expand the operation to the point where it could actually support even the families that were already there. You know, I explain in the book, and you probably read this part already, that, you know, my dad died when he was 58 years old, and the most he ever made on that ranch was $600 a month. And he still had to pay for the vast majority of his expenses. And so I found myself living in that position, and I thought, there's just no way. I can't make this work financially. But even if I wanted to have come back, you know, after my grandfather passed away and my father was there and his two cousins were there, there really was no way to financially make it work. You know, we had 250 to 300 head of cows feeding four families. Those numbers just flat do not work. And so our business model as a result was, well, just don't spend anything and we'll be okay. Well, that doesn't work in today's world, right? So, you know, we talked earlier before we came on the show here about, you know, the price of certain crops jumping and having to really market those and do some forward thinking. And if you're not doing that and you're not staying on top of things and you're not changing things to live with changing times, then you're always going to find yourself in a very hard predicament. And that's why it's important to address the white elephant head on, to have the conversations that are hard, because have those conversations now so that your family doesn't have to.
Ron, I always appreciate the time. I hope people connect with you, learn more. It's something that affects a lot of us, and I appreciate you sharing your story.
Thanks so much for your time, Andrew, and just appreciate everything you're doing for American agriculture. It's really just exceptional.
I would encourage you to visit Ron's websites or even check out his book. Not only is Ron just a good guy, he's also in charge of a growing and forward-thinking farming operation. And I think you'll find his advice helpful as you think about family changes that may impact your operation now or in the future. Thanks for listening. It's nearing harvest time for many of us, so be safe, and hopefully you'll have a good crop to harvest here in 2020. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.